Good morning, everyone. Pleasure to see you all again. Rabbi Shestack just left, but he did leave with some important words of introduction, including the observation that Yom Tov is often an area where people are most interested in reviewing their halakhic knowledge or bolstering their halakhic practice. I think especially with regard to the situation in which we find ourselves, I think disruptions to a Yom Tov routine I felt much more acutely by halakhically observant people. So it's hard to imagine that, you know, around a year ago, the COVID-19 pandemic was just beginning. And it was really disruptions to Purim and to Pesach that I think were particularly jarring for people in their religious lives. That and not being able to go to Minyan in general. But certainly the Chagim became a very pronounced area. It's actually fascinating just to like think back to where we were a year ago. I'm talking halakhically. I think a year ago in the secular calendar, the COVID-19 had hardly been on anyone's radar. But it was around Purim time where the first kinds of ramifications of COVID, of quarantines, of lockdowns and isolations really became most pronounced. I remember at the time that my father had been teaching in a school. One of his, one of the parents of one of his students, I believe, had actually tested positive. And so his class was quarantined and he was quarantined for Parshat Zachor, the Parsha that we read in Shul before Purim. And that was for me the first like inklings of, oh, this might be a longer term thing with bigger consequences than we'd realized. In fact, looking at some of the halakhic literature in advance of Purim, I also noticed that Rav Schechter, whose tshuvot we've been relying on for much of our learning together, didn't actually put out material for Purim last year. Right, his first tshuvot really relate to Pesach and to getting new cookware for people who are used to going away for Pesach, or tovel and cookware when you don't have any, getting rid of chametz, and things like that that were most important around Pesach time, you know, a few weeks after Purim. By Purim, I remember feeling very disoriented and not having a clear sense of grounding in what was happening and how it would affect our communities and what needed to be done in order to meet the community's needs. And so it's notable that at the time, you know, it was all happening far too quickly in order to put out, you know, well-articulated, clear tshuvot. New psak was coming out, and just the first thing I'll share with you is actually a book that came out relatively recently. It's called Ein Yitzchak HaKorana Bahalacha. It's by Rav Yitzchak Yosef, the Rishon Letzion, the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel. And what it does is it sort of summarizes halakhic discussions from the past year. So it starts actually with Mivodidei HaKorona B'mitzvot HaPurim. People who are isolated because of COVID, what do they do during Purim? And that's his first, you know, short essay that he dealt with. And certainly people had guidance for what to do for Parshat Zachor, what to do for the Megillah during that time. So at the same time, it was the first ramification on some level of COVID lockdowns. And at the same time, it was also new that it might not be as emblematic of the community's overall halakhic response to COVID. So one thing I hope to do, we won't be doing so much of it today, is to compare some of the Purim guidance that's coming out now with the Purim guidance that came out a year ago, and how it differs in tone or in content, with the expectation or the hypothesis that perhaps there are differences between immediately responding to a crisis and needing to do so relatively quickly, as opposed to having a year to adjust to a new reality and to really accommodate new situations. This, I think, is what Rabbi Shestack was alluding to earlier as well, with this notion that now that we have advanced time to prepare, some of the solutions that we did not have then, we may actually have now. So with those words of introduction, we'll get into some of the details of a few particular halachot. Some of the bigger topics, and I'll say bigger both, you know, quantitatively and qualitatively, and I'll show you what I mean in a second, will be addressed, I think, in the next couple of weeks leading up to Purim. But we'll start now with a few smaller, more self-contained topics to ease us in. Our learning today is going to be guided by a new recent tshuva from Rav Schechter. This came out, just to scroll to the bottom, this came out on Yud Chet Shvat, Tavshin Pei, Aleph. So something like a week ago. So it's relatively recent, relatively fresh. And again, he hadn't put out anything like this last year. So this is the first time he's addressed Purim questions in the context of the Piskei Korona. You'll see that this is one of the longer psakim and is broken up into, I believe, 11 sections dealing with six or seven different topics. So we won't be going through all of it together today, but we'll be looking at some individual parts of it. Beginning with, I think, the earliest or soonest ramification of COVID on Purim, which has to do with the reading of Parshat Zachor. Like I said, this was the first time that, at least for my family, some of these issues were relevant. So to start with the background, there's a practice of over the course of four Shabbatot, starting from before Rosh Chodesh Adar until the Shabbos before Pesach, we read four different parshiot. Just additional things instead of maftir, which would usually be a repetition of a few psukim at the end of the Torah reading. We have special parshiot and a special haftarot that we read on special weekends leading up to, over the course of the weeks, you know, between, you know, let's say Adar and Nisan, more or less. And the second one, the one that's relevant for us, B'Shabbat Shniya Motzim Shnei Sfarim, B'Achat Korei Parshat HaShavua, U'V'Sheni Korei Zachor Et Asher Asa Lecha Amalek. So this is the mitzvah of reading Parshat Zachor, which is the second of the four parshiot. And on those weeks, we bring out two Sefer Torah. We don't usually roll from one to the other. It might be that in a shul with one Sefer Torah, you will roll between parshiot. But the idea is that you read from the parsha, and then you read from Parshat Zachor. Umaftir pakadati et asher asa Amalek. Again, a haftorah that also relates to what Amalek had done to Bnei Yisrael as they departed Egypt and were on their way towards Sinai. We also read a related parsha in Parshat Bashalach, which we'll get to in a little bit, last week in Shul. But to fill in the background, and before we get to Rav Schechter's issue with Parshat Zachor, is the halacha here a little bit later on in the Shulchan Aruch. Yesh omrim, she Parshat Zachor u Parshat Para, Aduma, chayavim lekaram mide oraita. Parshat Zachor and Parshat Para. Parshat Para is a little bit more in dispute. That's the one we read in a couple of weeks after Parshat Zachor. Are biblical obligations, the chiyuvim mi de'oraita. And because they're de'oraita halachot, the severity of failing to meet those halachot is increased, and therefore we're willing to go to greater lengths to avoid missing those opportunities. Lefichach, b'nei ha'yishuvim, if you live in a place without a minyan, this is a discussion that comes up in the Rishonim, and it seemed not uncommon that people would be in places without minyanim, given the frequency with which it comes up in halachic writings. So if you were lived in such a place, you would actually need to go away for Shabbos to a place where there is a minyan, in order to fulfill these obligations of hearing these parshiot, which at least some think are de'oraita. It's again more well accepted by Zachor than by Para. So it's a biblical obligation. You have to do it. And that means that if you're away for Shabbos, you have to find a place to be for Shabbos that will allow you to fulfill this mitzvah or these mitzvot. The Ramah immediately softens this a little bit. And this brings us to Rav Schechter's starting point. V'im e'efshar lehem lavo. If it's not possible, right? Shulchan Aruch sets this idea, you have to find a place to be. It's a biblical obligation such that you can't, you know, avoid it just because it's too much difficulty or it's too inconvenient. But if it is too inconvenient, if it actually isn't possible, mikol makom yisharu likrotam beneginatam uvata'amam. You should still make sure to read it with its nigina, with its tune, uvita'amam, with its trop. with the appropriate pronunciation and intonation as we read that. And so we already see in this halacha on the Shulchan Aruch this question of failure to attend a parshat Zachor minyan and what that entails, what is necessary, and what are options if we fail to do what is really ideal. We'll shift now to see Rav Schachter's presentation of the options as they appear. Rav Schachter presents basically a sliding scale of you know, less and less ideal options for fulfilling the mitzvah of hearing parshat Zachor read in shul. Lechatchila, he says, bevadai min hanachon lishmo a parshat Zachor mitoch haktav. It is best lechatchila to hear from a written sefer Torah, not even from a chumash, but read from a sefer Torah. The asara b'shabbat shalifnei Purim kamavur b'shulchan aruch. The asara with a minyan. So you have to hear it read in shul. You have to hear it with a minyan on the Shabbos before Purim. Kamavur b'shulchan aruch. And we have seen that was the ideal to the point where one would have to go out of one's way in order to hear parshat Zachor if one was otherwise unable to. Achein im yevshar la'asot kein. If it's not possible, kigon le'ilu hanimtzeim bevidud, for people who are in isolation, for example, still not uncommon occurrence, especially for people who are quarantining after having been exposed to potential carriers. Min hanachon im efshar, it would be better, if possible, sheikur'u biyachidut mitoch sefer Torah kasher, b'li brachot. If a person has a sefer Torah in their home, just can't go to shul, so you should read it from the sefer Torah. And that seems to be what the Ramah had recommended that we had just seen, that if you can't go with a minyan, you should at the very least read it from a Sefer Torah with the proper tune and intonation. Avim gamet zeh yefshar, which I assume it is for most people who don't have Sefer Torah at home. Hamagina Avraham katav, she'afshar letzei yedei chovat zechirat amalek b'shmiat hakriya de'shacharit bipurim. The Magen Avraham claims that you could fulfill the mitzvah of Zechirat Amalek not from Parshat Zachor, but from the reading that we do on Purim morning. So let's go look back on our source sheet and see the Magen Avraham inside. The Magen Avraham is dealing with a question. He wants to know, I guess essentially, why it is that people are more makbid on hearing the Megillah properly, in its proper time, with a minyan, as opposed to hearing Parshat Zachor with a minyan. We had just seen in the Shulchan Aruch that reading Parshat Zachor is a deoraita. It's a biblical level obligation. Reading the Megillah can't be a mitzvah mideoraita because the events of the Megillah hadn't happened when the Torah was given. So there's a dispute about what kind of rabbinic level mitzvah it is. Maybe it's a category called Divrei Kabbalah, mitzvah that are referred to or obligated by books in Nach as opposed to in the Torah. So figuring out the scope or the nature of that non-deoraita category is a little bit complicated, but certainly it's not on the level of a biblical mitzvah. So like whenever Magen Avraham is confused why it is that we're so much more makbid on being a shul for Purim than we are for the Shabbos before Purim to hear Parshat Zachor. And he writes as follows, the linear liyashev minaga olam, the way to explain the prevalent practice, the Torah, when it says that you should remember what Amalek did, it doesn't say to remember it. It doesn't say to go the Shabbos before Purim and make sure to hear this laning as a maftir and shul with a minyan. It just says you should make sure to remember it. So the Magen Avraham says that itself isn't part of the mitzvah. Ela shechachamim tiknu b'shabbat zo. First of all, the Chachamim decided to fulfill this mitzvah on the Shabbos before Purim because many people aren't sure the Shabbos before Purim. Shabbos before Purim is often a particularly fun time to be in shul. Certainly in yeshivot, it's often a very mirthful Shabbos. People will often be in costume. They will daven or lane with, you know, funny tunes. That's the kind of Shabbos you would hear people use, you know, Disney tunes for Kedusha, for example. So it is a time to be in shul. And v'samach l'Purim, it's also next to Purim, and that's beneficial. K'dei l'smoch ma'aseh Amalek l'ma'aseh Haman. There's also an additional value of putting Parshat Zachor, which refers to the danger and the harm caused to us by Amalek when we were leaving Egypt, to the danger posed by Amalek's descendant, Haman, in the Megillah on Purim. And so there's a sort of direct connection between those two, and it's appropriate to read the Parsha before Purim. However, if it's not possible to do so, that doesn't seem to be as strictly obligatory, according to the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says, "V'im kein kishishomea b'Purim Parshat Vayavo Amalek." When we read this Parsha of Vayavo Amalek, which is our Parsha from that we had read recently in Parsha Peshalach, then Nami Zocher Ma'asa Amalek, you will also remember what Amalek did to us in Mitzrayim. That is, in fact, the part of the Torah that describes exactly what Amalek did to us as we were leaving Mitzrayim. V'yosei yedei choveto. And he fulfills his obligation in that way. Just to be clear, we have these two parshiyot. I put them in full. We don't need to read all of them. But the parsha from which we generally both derive the obligation of reading Parshat Zachor, of remembering Amalek once a year, as well as the parsha usually read in order to do so, is from Sefer Devarim. Zachor eid asher asalacha Amalek baderach b'teitchem Mitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on your way traveling when you left Egypt. And then he describes in sort of brief what Amalek did, as well as the mitzvah to wipe out the memory of Amalek. And that's the sort of baseline parsha that we typically use. However, on Purim morning, we don't read that parsha. We actually read this other parsha of Vayavo Amalek, which is from Beshalach, which again, we read relatively recently. And it describes it's actually the original place where the discussion of Amalek is described in the Torah. And the Magen Avraham says, look, there's no difference between reading these two parshiot. Both of them describe Amalek and what they did to us as we left Egypt. Both of them are therefore a fulfillment of the mitzvah to remember what they did to us when we left Egypt. And so preferring one over the other isn't necessary, according to the Magen Avraham. And therefore, someone who is in isolation on Parshat Zachor, but not on Purim, which I think will be possible this year. Parshat Zachor is, we read almost a full week before Purim, right? Because Purim is on a Friday. So it's very reasonable that a person might be in isolation or in lockdown on the Shabbos for Purim, but not on Purim itself. And so you can fulfill the obligation according to the Magen Avraham in that way. And that's what Rosh Hashanah recommends. It is possible to fulfill your mitzvah on the Shachrit of Purim. But Rosh Hashanah goes on. There are those who don't agree with that claim. L'data cholkim ala Magen Avraham. V'zovrim she'en yotzim b'kriyat parshat vayavo amalek. There are those who think that you can't use that first parsha from B'shalach, but only ala dafka b'parshat zachor from kiteitze, from Devarim that we saw. Presumably based on the fact of the pasuk being listed there. The pasuk in Kiteti is Zachor Eid Asher Salacha Amalek, which is not as explicit in the Parsha and Beshalach. So some think that you can't actually fulfill your obligation in that way. Well, you can still fulfill your obligation by hearing Parsha Zachor read itself from the Torah when you read Kiteti. Yishlehem lachavein be'emtza hakayitz b'shmiat Parsha Kiteti latzei yedei chovat mitzvah zeh. You can still fulfill the mitzvah by hearing Parsha Zachor when it's read in the summer. So for a person who misses Parshat Zachor because of lockdown, Rosh Hashanah recommends hearing an Amalek-related reading when it's next possible to do so, either on Purim morning or later during Kiteitze. If you ask Rosh Hashanah, well, which one should I do? He probably would recommend having in mind to fulfill the mitzvah in both contexts. I don't know that for sure, and if someone does know that for sure, I'd be happy to hear why they would think otherwise. But because it's a dispute, the Magen Avraham says you get to fulfill it on Shachrit at Purim, and that might be a better time to fulfill it in theory due to its juxtaposition to the Megillah. Maybe that's preferable. Maybe reading Zachor is preferable because everyone agrees that reading Parshat Zachor, when you read it as part of Parshat Kiteitze, is going to fulfill the mitzvah. But certainly those are the options that he recommends. He then notes one final option. V'yeshe yitziyu. Kriyat Parshat Zachor be'achad bimei hachol kodem purim beit haknesset ba'asara b'li brachot. There's some who recommend that, some have suggested, at least, that you should go to shul, you know, the week after Parshat Zachor, and read Parshat Zachor in shul. Sheyuchu ha'acherim lishmoa derech Zoom. So that people should be able to watch by Zoom. We've at this point seen Zoom come up a number of times in our shiurim. And it seems that Zoom is going to be one of those features of halachic discussion that really are incredibly novel. Video technology has existed, but the emphasis on which video technology is being used and the frequency with which it's being quoted in halachic literature seems to be at least one of the, seems like it might be one of the enduring consequences of COVID halachic literature, where the factor of Zoom is going to be much more explicitly addressed in a wide variety of contexts where it might not have been addressed traditionally. So he notes that suggestion. He actually doesn't clearly endorse it or reject it. There's more discussion on how to view Zoom in general and Rav Shachter's view of Zoom. I've seen written up in other places. We won't have time to go into that today, but he notes that suggestion. And later on, when dealing with the Megillah, he also notes that possible suggestion as well. So when presumably next week, we'll deal with Megillah a little bit more directly, and we will deal with that issue when it comes up there. Okay, so at this point, we've seen the advice for Parshat Zachor, preferably being able to go to Parshat Zachor, or to read it from your own Sefer Torah. And if not, then find the next time a Zachor Parsha is being read, and a Malik-related Parsha is being read, either per morning or again later in the summer, and use that to fulfill your annual obligation of hearing and remembering what a Malik did to Bnei Israel in the desert. Okay. Happy to pause for questions now, and otherwise we'll move on to Mishloach Manot. Okay. So Mishloach Manot, when I first, you know, saw that section in this tshuva, I was a little puzzled as to what particular COVID relevance there might be to Mishloach Manot. But it turned out to be actually a very interesting observation that Rav Shachter makes. He claims as follows. And we are skipping around, like I said, deliberately, because we'll deal with some of the bigger topics next week. Umibnei ha-magefa, sharbei choshishim yila'achol ma'achalim shenagubo acherim. Because of the pandemic, people are wary of eating food that other people may have touched. Mistama min ha-nachon lama'it b'mishloach manot. Therefore, it's a good idea, it makes sense, to not do, not be as intensively involved in mishloach manot. Dekayem et efsharut. There's a good chance that someone will get your gift. They'll be very grateful. Thank you so much. It's very kind. And then they'll throw it out immediately after you leave because they don't want to eat from food that other people have touched. And therefore, Rav Shachter says, you should presumably not do too much Mishloach Manot and be too excessively involved in that mitzvah. It's always interesting because the Ramah, at least, and this is endorsed by Achronim as well, if you send manot and people don't want to take them, or they're mochal, meaning they reject the gift, nonetheless, you fulfilled your mitzvah. So if I send mishloach manot to people, even if they don't accept them, or if they do accept them, presumably, and then throw them out, still I fulfilled my mitzvah of mishloach manot. Rav Shachter isn't saying, oh, if someone throws out your mishloach manot, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah, you have to make sure to give others. I think it's making a much more sort of intuitive, pragmatic argument, right? If you're going to spend that much money on mishloach manot, it would be very unfortunate for someone to make all these nice packages and give them out and then have them all thrown out. It would just be a waste of food and money as well as time. And this is the extra nakuda that he adds, there also is a different religious priority at play. Let's look at this Rambam. Which is pretty interesting. In certain circles, it's emphasized every year, and I wonder if Rav Shachter is among those. I actually don't know. But the Rambam argues that there's a priority between the mitzvot of matanot la'avyonim over the other mitzvot of parim. Mutav la'adam la'harbot b'matanot avyonim. It's better for a person to offer additional gifts to the poor, which is one of the mitzvot of parim. That's more important than having your own very nice suda or to have more mishloach manot. If you have some extra money at hand, you should make sure to really emphasize matanot la'avyonim and giving to those who are in need more than the other mitzvot of Purim. He doesn't mention Mikra Megillah because Mikra Megillah and Matan Levionim aren't at tension in any meaningful way, whereas these others are, right? They each are a draw on your time and on your wallet in a much more related way. Why is there this preference? She'ein Hashem Simcha Gedola U'mefo'ara. There is no greater joy Ela L'sameach Lev Aniyim V'yetomim V'amanot V'geirim than to make others joyous, to gladden the hearts of the poor, orphans, widows, strangers, converts. Shemesameach lev ha'umlalim ha'elu doma l'shechina. One who makes these people happy is themselves analogous to God or analogous to the Shechina. Right? God is the one who sustains and supports the downtrodden of society, those who are really in need. And when we on Purim take on that mantle, we are becoming godly. It's a very strong claim in the Rambam, one that I think is very aspirational and not necessarily lived up to in many communities. But it's a really high bar and really an aspirational view of how to spend our resources on Purim. And the priority given to those who are in need, established by the Rambam, seems to be a pretty important one. Rav Shachter here is arguing, you know, especially this year, he would say, where Mishloach Manot themselves aren't going to be that useful or that meaningful. Especially in this context, we should follow the Rambam's advice. So he cites the Rambam in full, without the proof text, but he says most of the Rambam, with his idea that, look, giving Matan L'Avyonim will always be appreciated, even this year, especially this year, perhaps, when people are in more dire economic straits than usual. And Mishloach Manot will be less appreciated this year. So if there's ever been a time to adopt the Rambam's model of giving more Matanot Le'avyonim and fewer Mishloach Manot, it would be this year. Rav Shachter may, again, advocate for this in general, but certainly under these circumstances, that's a preference that he has. Okay, so far we've seen two areas of halacha, Parsha Zachor and the baseline mitzvah of Mishloach Manot, where there has been an impact of COVID to Purim practices, and Rav Shachter makes whatever recommendations that he makes in these contexts. There are two more small sections here, maybe three more small sections that we'll see together that deal with some more related issues. So the next section that we'll look at still relates to Mishloach Manot, which seems to be less directly related to COVID, but of halakhic importance and potential halakhic importance in particular during COVID. Rav Shachter starts this section Zion. V'shapir efshar l'kayim mishloach manot al yedei shliach. A person can surely fulfill mishloach manot with a shliach. The relevance, I think, is, well, people who are less able to travel, or again, who might be on lockdowns, might be in a place where you'll need a shliach in order to deliver your mishloach manot. You're still chayim in them this year, even if you aren't necessarily encouraged in Rav Shachter's world to give as many as you would normally give. So you might want to use a shliach for this purpose. And in fact, he cites the Mishnah Brura, who goes even further. He cites Tshuva ben Tzion, Nistapek, Im Hevi Ba'atzmo Hamanot V'lo Ayere Shliach, I Yotzei. At least the Binyan Tzion was unsure if you fulfill the mitzvah when you deliver Mishloach Manot on your own. Kevan Dechtiv U'mishloach. Right, this is an interesting kind of inference from the text of the Megillah. The mitzvah is mishloach manot ish l'reyehu, sending gifts from one to another. So it's possible if you deliver it yourself and you haven't sent it with a messenger, you may not have fulfilled your obligation. So he cites such a view. So neima deba'ina davka ayirei shlichu. Maybe you should actually really need a shliach and not just do it on your own. Which is an interesting view. Rav Shachter himself notes, V'zachorani sheshamati mimorinu harav Yerucham Gorelek, Zal, sheb'yeshivot be'Europa, in European yeshivot, hayu lahem latamidim ta'anot al ha-mishnah brura al shehizkir de'azeu. There were people who were concerned or had, you know, claims against the Mishnah Brura for having cited this view. Meaning, it's a view in the Mishnah Brura. It doesn't seem like it's necessarily the most well-endorsed view. But it's such a view that you may be obligated to use a messenger. It ends up happening very often anyway that people will do so. People who, you know, families who will send some members of the family on Mishloach Manot runs often end up using a shliach. And so, but certainly if there's a position that you have to, it becomes very likely that you'll fulfill the obligation if you end up doing so. So he recommends, V'shapir efshar limsur k'safim l'mamuna al-kach, sh'b'beit ha'knesset lefnei Purim. So you could donate money to someone in shul who runs a Mishloach Manot campaign, as is typically done, I think, in very many shuls. So you could give money to someone before Purim. Or, and this was more surprising to me, or you can promise before Purim that, you know, make a pledge, I'm going to give this money after Purim, and have someone give the Mishloach Manot for you before Purim. This was a little bit more surprising to me. This should also work. And then on Purim itself, whoever runs the Mishloach Manot campaign will send the Mishloach Manot for you, and you'll fulfill your mitzvah in that way. But he has a caveat, and a pretty significant one. If 10 people request, different shuls do this differently. I actually don't know how our shul is doing it. Some shuls have it such that you could choose what person you want to send Mishloach Manot to through the shul. Whereas other shuls have a more communal fund. Everyone, you know, contributes, and then the shul sends to a wide group of members. But in a shul where multiple people designate Mishloach Manot to a single person, it's important, Mistaber Lomar, Shakulam Yotzim, Rak Im Yeshir Manot Lachol Achad Ve'achad, V'lo Maspik Bishir Achad. In order for multiple people to fulfill their mitzvah of Mishloach Manot, they each need to be giving a significant enough mana to fulfill their own obligation. Right, so these the two different foods, conventionally done with two different brachot, though that's not as significant of a requirement. And so if multiple people are going to send to the same person, the shul needs to ensure that each person is, or each, I guess, donor is being accounted for individually in the packaging and in the selling of the Mishloach Manot. So another interesting ramification. I think already we're skewing a little bit further away from direct COVID relevance. This is something that would be relevant to tell people in general. You're going to contribute to a shul fund for Mishloach Manot. That's great. A valuable opportunity to build community, to contribute to a shul. But you have to make sure to fulfill the obligation in the way that's appropriate. So it's already, you know, COVID adjacent more than a direct COVID halacha. And we've seen that in a few of our areas where sometimes COVID will sort of push us to think about things that we wouldn't necessarily think about without being of sort of direct relevance and direct import. Just for the last couple of minutes, I want to look at one or two other smaller areas that come up in Rav Schachter's presentation here. And then, like I said, we'll come back and we'll do a broader discussion of a few bigger issues when they next come up. Okay. So we have this very short section here in section Tet in this tshuva. Ve'elu she'yishtatfu b'minyan ha'me'uchar she'bebeit ha'knesset b'leil Purim l'mikra Megillah. A person who may need to go to a later minyan for Megillah reading on Purim. Again, this often happens independent of COVID. People who have young children, for example, will often divide the load and couples will split up and each go to a different reading. But going to a late reading is probably especially pronounced during COVID. And this is the longest section, actually, of Rav Schachter's tshuva, dealing with how to make sure that everyone is able to hear the Megillah properly, given that you need to have many readings. You don't have that much space in which to do the readings. You want to maintain proper distancing. So those details definitely are fleshed out, and we'll see some more of those next week. But if a person does end up at a later minyan, which can happen, then the question is, what happens when people get hungry? Are you allowed to eat before reading the Megillah? So he says the Mishnah Berurah that we won't read in full. Ayin Mishnah Berurah, shemi ikar hadin ti'ima mutarat kodam ha-Megillah. A person is allowed to eat, you know, a snack before the Megillah is read, right? People will be fasting Tanit Esther. So you get to Leil Purim. Then you're not supposed to read before reading Megillah or before doing mitzvah in general. And so then you're going to wait until the later Megillah reading, and suddenly you've been fasting for a very long time and people will get hungry. And so apparently ti'ima, small, you know, tasting food, having a small bite to eat is fine, according to the Mishnah Berurah. Rak shalo yochlu suda shlema. You shouldn't have a big full meal before the Megillah. The chashash being, you know, one of a couple of factors. It's not as respectful to the mitzvah or to eat before doing so. There's a chance that if you eat, you get drowsy, you may not fulfill the mitzvah properly. So there are a few ideas behind this halacha, but a small snack doesn't run into these problems. And before shofar, you have the same issue: eating before doing a mitzvah. Is it appropriate to do so? And many yeshiva would have a minag of having a kiddush after shacharit, before shofar blowing or before masaf. Some communities do as well, depending on the length of their davening. And so having a small snack before Megillah reading or before blowing shofar is acceptable. We'll do the Mishnah Berurah in full. It's a little bit too long for our purposes, but this is another area of halakhic relevance. And finally, we'll look at this very last section where he deals with the question of having multiple people read the Megillah. This already is, you know, pretty independent of COVID. As far as I could tell, there's no particular reason that having multiple readers of a single Megillah reading should be more of a problem. If anything, it should be less of a problem. If we're spreading out Megillah readers to make sure you have many minyanim, then the idea that you should have, you know, multiple readers at each reading, you know, increases the number of readers that you need. It becomes very difficult to live up to. So he does deal with this issue. He says to Mishnah Berurah, "Sheish dea she'enu nachon klal lechalek et kriyat Megillah l'shein Hashem." There are some who think that you really shouldn't divide up Megillah reading among many people. Shachetio kore. Shachetio harishon yikra Reuven, v'chetio hasheni yikra Shimon. That multiple, you know, Reuven should read half, Shimon should read half. And I've been in places where each parak is read by a different person. The Mishnah Berurah is saying that's not necessarily ideal. V'afta kamalan dibdiyevet kain. Yatsa. If you do so, you fulfill the mitzvah unambiguously. Rashi thinks you should really be machmir if you can to avoid running into an issue. He does cite, and I thought this was fascinating, and this is a great place to end, Rav Yosef Luchstein Zal, Hinhig B'Ramaz, the school of Ramaz, Rabbi Luchstein encouraged them, L'chalik et perkehem agila ben kama ukama mi bugrei ha-yeshiva. They had many alumni of Ramaz read the Megillah. Kedei lahamshicha kesher beinam uvein ha-yeshiva ulechazkam bishmira ha-mitzvot. So that there's more of a connection between alumni and the institution that taught them. It's also, you know, good chizuk for their general mitzvah observance to be more connected to the yeshiva, to be performing religious functions in the context of their high school. Ubevadei im yesh tzorach lazeh shadotcha kediava dami umotor lechatchila. Then if you have such a need, if you feel like you have a community where people would really get a lot of religious chizuk from this practice, then of course you should feel free to divide up the Megillah and to do so in that way. But in the absence of such a context, Rav Shachter prefers not doing so. He doesn't tell you exactly what counts as a Shabbat Chak for this purpose, what kinds of chizuk you might need, whether he would say the same thing about schools that aren't Ramaz, that deal with different populations. It's a little bit unclear, and I don't want to, you know, make a claim or speculate as to what he might think about other kinds of contexts. But setting up this preference for having one reader is something he feels the need to do. Again, totally independent of COVID. And we'll see this again more, I think, next time we learn together. But the idea that COVID will prompt people to deal with halakhic issues that they wouldn't have dealt with otherwise, even if they're not directly COVID-related, is something that we've already seen and will continue to see in our survey of the literature. Okay, so just very briefly to recap what we've seen, we began with a discussion of reading Parshat Zachor and the ways to do so for people who are unable to attend shul on the week it's being read in shul, whether reading it on one's own is an option or catching up with another reading when possible. We saw a couple of Mishloach Manot related issues, using a messenger to fulfill your mitzvah of Mishloach Manot, or potentially minimizing the number of Mishloach Manot we send anyway this year because people may throw them out. And finally, we concluded with a discussion of eating before reading the Megillah and having multiple people read the Megillah, both of which are not, you know, COVID directly related issues, but certainly ones where Rav Shachter's opinion is itself interesting regardless. I'm going to stop the recording, but I'll stay on for any questions.